Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting for Light. My guest today is Sherry Courtland. She has a degree in naturopathy and studied herbology. And she's also author of a recent book that's been published called Windows of Opportunity. And it introduces the concepts of what her group guides call relationship villains, and includes chapters on various subjects such as karma, reincarnation, extraterrestrials and evolution. And the object of the book is to help people to recognize windows in their lives and take the opportunity to take control of their spiritual growth. So welcome to the program, Sherry.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's so great to be on with you.
Well, you're very welcome. And having read your book, it's extremely interesting, and I've got a whole wad of questions here to ask you. But I think the place to start, really, since you used your notes to write the book, which notes you obtained through automatic writing, is to ask you when you first started doing it.
Great question. It was back in 1989 when I first started to do automatic writing. I had read all of the Ruth Montgomery books, and I thought that that was just the coolest thing that I had ever heard about. She sat down at her table, and her guide group wrote through her, Lily, and then later Arthur Ford. And I thought, you know, I love this whole concept, and I want to do it too. I had read so many different books, and I thought, you know, I think I'd like to get a little bit of wisdom direct and give that a try. So it was 1989 when I first started to do automatic writing, so about 20 years now.
Right. It seems a long time to have been taking automatic writing and having acquired what were obviously a lot of notes and keep it until this time before you put it together and publish the book. Now, was there a reason for you waiting that length of time?
There was, and I wish that you could see the closet in my office. It's filled and filled with all these notebooks going back to 1989. I can't bear to throw anything away. Back then I was doing it by pencil, you know, in pen, not on the computer like I do now. But I waited because in the beginning it was personal information, you know, got guidance, that kind of thing. It was 2004 when Jeremy, the main guide from this guide group who dictated the book information, when he told me that we were gonna write a book. And I didn't want to do it because I was very happy being in the New Age closet. I didn't want people to think of me as weird, and I just didn't want to be out there with it. And I don't know about you, Mike, but I have found that I lose every argument I ever try to have with spirit. The bottom line is that it just became easier to write the book than to not write the book. Although I never ever thought that it was going to be published. I really thought that I was just kind of okay, you guys, you want to write a book for me? That's fine. I'll take those notes. Okay, you want me to take those notes and put them in order for a book? I'll do that. Okay, you want me to send it out to a publisher? I'll do that. Laughing inside the whole time, thinking this doesn't have a snowball's chance to get published. But it did. They were laughing probably more at me.
Yes, well, they obviously never gave up on you. They certainly made sure you got there in the end. But
they did.
One would guess that perhaps the time lapse was all to good purpose, because I think that people's spiritual awareness is growing very rapidly at this time, and it's probably a very suitable time to issue a book like yours.
I think that there's definitely a reason why they wanted it out, and I do find that people are much more open to these things than they were, say, 10 years ago. I can remember with one of my own personal relationship villains going back about 14 years, where she took my naturopathy studies and my herbology studies, and she tried to turn that into voodoo and witchcraft and spread some really nasty rumors about me. People misunderstood a lot of things, even just as, you know, as little time ago as a decade ago. Nowadays, people know at work that I have this book out, and nobody's blinking an eye. In fact, they're asking me questions about it and giving me an opportunity to sit down with them and really open up about some of these things. So I've been amazed at the reception that the book has had since it came out.
Yeah, I'm not really, although strangely enough, there must be at least several hundred books of a similar nature that describe that side of our spiritual life. So maybe it is surprising that yet another one that is proving to be successful. What is it in the book that the guide group wants people to know?
The guide group, I think that they really have one main purpose. And I think that's to help us accelerate our spiritual group, our growth, and to finish our to-do list for this lifetime faster and with less drama and pain. And I think, too, that they want us to take responsibility for our lives. In other words, if we can recognize what's going on in our lives, and they use relationship villains and windows of opportunity to help us do that, then we can take control, wake up, see what's going on in our lives, take the action that we need to take so that we can move on, go to the next level.
Right, yes. Now, you've got your book divided up very well into different chapters that cover the different subjects, some of which I mentioned at the start. Now, chapter 2, which really starts the book, I guess, because the first chapter tells people about the details and how it all came about, hence some of my questions. Now, what did they tell you that related to the people who in the past had rewritten and altered everything handed down to them to gain power? I mean, what did that relate to that had, shall we say, some serious effect on our spiritual progress?
Are you thinking about the 60s and the flower children?
No, I'm thinking of the going back possibly even hundreds of years. I think they made a reference to our spiritual evolution, and they were commenting on the fact that possibly hundreds of years ago, as information was handed down, it was rewritten or altered.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do know what you're talking about. According to the guides, a lot of the information that's in the Bible and other books of that nature has been altered by people who want to control other people. Things were kind of changed a little bit so that people would do what others wanted them to do. They talk, I think, in the book a little bit about Constantine of Rome and how he copied some quote-unquote pagan religious practices and incorporated those into early Christianity, which he then used for control. The Holy Trinity, the Christian holidays, a lot of those can be traced back to pagan holidays.
Yeah, that's very true. I did some time ago read an article about Constantine by someone who researched it very carefully, even actually going through Catholic sort of directories and records and things. And it would appear that he called a meeting and he got the sort of top people from various countries and religions to come to the meeting, and evidently this guy's conclusion was that he took what you might call the best of what he found in other people's religions and incorporated it into making the Christian religion. So what you're saying there, which your guides have commented on, makes sense, because they picked a bit here and a bit there.
they kind of did and left out. I mean, I guess they thought maybe that if we knew about reincarnation and we knew that we had an opportunity to do things over again, we would be less easy to control. At probably especially back in feudal times, you know, medieval times when things were so hard, it's easy to keep people in line by promising them great things if they do what they're told to do, and you know, hence religion. I want nothing more than to have a book that has the words of God in it that we can follow, or the Creator, and truly know that comes from the Creator and how to live our lives. But from the things that I've found at different times in my life, religious-wise, I have a hard time with organized religion. At this time in my life, I kind of I kind of follow the do unto others rule. That's, if I had to have a religion, I guess that's what it would be, you know, to treat people the same way that I would want to be treated myself. I had some early experiences. I was brought up Catholic, and then my first husband, his family was Baptist. And so I started to go to their church. My family wasn't really going to church at the time. And I thought, well, what the heck? It doesn't matter. You know, there's one God. What does it matter? Baptist church, Catholic church, who cares? Methodist church. And, the pastor in that church started talking about how anyone who was Catholic would go to hell because they practiced idolatry. And his idea of idolatry was just a cross with Jesus on it. Or statues of the Virgin Mary in the home. Well, that would pretty much take out everybody in my family, and had a real hard time with that. I questioned him about it after services, and he said, nope, that's the way that it was. And that was probably my first step out of organized religion.
Yes, indeed. I suppose the very fact that there are so many different versions of the truth from a religious perspective really tells you in the first place that none of them can possibly hold the full truth. Although one has to say, in commenting on Orthodox religion, there are some excellent people in it, and of course there are truths, but they don't carry the same weight, I believe, as they would if the whole teachings were there. Now, in your chapter on karma, there's a very good statement there, saying that there's no such thing as evil. Now, some people would find that hard to understand. Tell people why that is the case.
Well, I believe that that is the case because I think that we mix up fear with evil. If there is any type of negative frequency on this planet at all, I would not call it evil. I would call it fear. And I think that that's something that people hold on to. Instead of facing it head on. And I think that when you try to avoid fear and you try not to think about it, you actually end up bringing more of it to you. But there really is no such thing as evil because, well, relationship, I would have to talk a little bit about relationship villains here first. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course, yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Okay. Well, relationship villains, the whole concept of relationship villains, I have to tell you, Mike, it really blew me away because I had never heard of this before. The guide group says that the people that we think of as annoying, people that we might even consider to be our enemies, they're actually our closest universal friends on the other side of the veil, but they've taken on kind of a villain role for this lifetime to help us learn a particular lesson or to stay on the right path. And these relationship villains, they can pop in and out of our lives. They can stick around for a long time, and we find them everywhere. They can be at work, at home, they're our family, our coworkers. And so the point here is that sometimes when terrible things happen to us, they happen, they're set in motion by people who are our relationship villains, who are really doing us a favor and helping us learn a lesson that we need to learn. Another reason that I don't believe in evil is because the things that happen to us, for the most part, are things that we've planned to happen to us. When we're on the other side of the veil and we're planning our next incarnation, we kind of sit down at a conference table, so to speak, and we've got a laundry list of the karmic debts that we want to repay and the experiences that we want to have for growth and learning. And we've got advisors there with us, kind of like a planning committee, our teachers, our guides, our loved ones, people that we plan to incarnate with. And at that point, kind of like writing an outline for a book, you know, we create a lifetime of opportunities to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish, to deal with all of that karma, to have our growth experiences. So when people say, oh, you know, these terrible things keep happening to me, that tells me right there that there's a life script going on and that that person has a series of windows of opportunities, and that if they would wake up and look at that life script and examine what's going on in their lives, they would be able to walk through that window and stop repeating that type of experience. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, indeed. And I think the idea that you're putting forward there really explains why we should be working towards the point in our spiritual development where we can exercise unconditional love.
Oh, yes, you're so right. You're so right about that. So, someone said to me that this book puts a new spin on Love Thine Enemy, and I had never thought about it until that person said those words to me, and it made perfect sense. You know, we just don't know who a relationship villain is. We don't know, but we can tell when a window of opportunity is coming around, and one of the best ways for us to spot those windows of opportunities is to take a look at our life scripts. If we take a look at our lives and we see the same kind of unpleasant event happening over and over again, then there's a message there. There's a message from the universe. There's a message from ourselves to wake up and do something here. If we examine the past and then we become aware of what's going on in the present and we can link those together, then we can spot those life scripts. I know for my nephew, Stephen, he had 6 fender benders in 1 year. I think that the universe was trying to tell him something, don't you?
Absolutely, yes.
It was. And when he stopped saying, oh, you know, what is happening to me? Oh, woe is me. When he started to take responsibility for it and started to look at it in a different way, those fender benders miraculously stopped. Mm. So I think when he faced up to what was going on and started to take control and started to handle things in a different way, stopped making the excuses and owned up to what was going on, then he was able to move on to another level in his life. Mm.
Is this why you or your guide said that people need to figure out what they are here for?
Absolutely. And one of the best ways to figure out what you're here for is to meditate and to listen to the little voice within. You know, that little voice is our higher self, and our higher self knows what's best for us. And there are many, many times, Mike, in my life that I ignored that little voice within. And if I had paid attention to it, I would have had a whole lot less drama and pain going on.
Yes. It's interesting that, because if you look back to a period before you had this knowledge, I suppose it's difficult to understand why you did some of the things you did, because now you can look back and think possibly how silly they were. Anyway, within all of this comes another factor, I suppose, that people have to understand, and that is the law of attraction, which applies to both thoughts and actions.
It does. It does, yes. Well, the law of attraction fits right in with windows of opportunities. Windows of opportunities are... They're little plans of actions that we put into our lives. We plan for them. And one of the things about windows of opportunity is this, and this is a good thing, and it's sometimes not so great a thing. We want to learn something. There's something that we want to learn so much that we've got some of our best friends on the other side planning to play a villain role to help us learn them if we don't learn them the easy way. Our windows of opportunity can start out nice and gentle, and then they can get more slap you in your face dramatic as we go on. The guide group says that it's much better to learn your lesson on the ground floor than to go all the way up to the penthouse to learn it. And it's okay if we miss a window of opportunity. We're going to get another chance to do it and get it right. And that's part of the law of attraction, I think, too, is that we continually draw the same type of situation to ourselves, so that we can learn the lesson that we so desperately want to learn. We wouldn't be drawing the same types of things to ourselves if there wasn't a very important reason for it.
Indeed. I think it was mentioned by your guide that as changes occur within oneself, that our thoughts become more powerful. What does that mean exactly?
Well, you know, everyone's vibrations are changing. Our light worker brigade on this planet is doing an excellent, excellent job bringing in the light, holding on to the light, and the entire vibrational level of the planet is changing. I think that everybody can feel it. And when it comes to our vibrations, our thoughts, our very thoughts and our words, those have vibrations attached to them. And if we put out negative thoughts and words into the atmosphere, well, that's really pollution. If we think positive thoughts and we put out positive words, we're helping to raise not only our personal vibrations, but we're helping to bring more light to the planet. The more light that we can bring to this planet, the easier the ultimate shift is going to be for everybody. So our words and our thoughts today are more important than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago, because the vibrations on our planet are so high now and our individual levels are higher now that we turn our thoughts into things much faster. Everything that is started out as a thought. The telephone started out as a thought. The computer started out as a thought. The light bulb started out as a thought. Everything started out as a thought in somebody's mind. And then it became reality. Well, now those things are happening much, much faster. So the guide group is kind of giving us a little hint here that we really need to watch the things that we think and say.
Yes. Indeed, I suppose you could sum that up by saying it is our power of creation, and as the vibration is getting higher, so that ability becomes more positive. And of course, then we have to take care that we don't project the wrong thoughts.
Absolutely, because what I don't think that people have a full understanding of yet, and I hope that they get this very soon, I know it's been difficult for me to learn, we are very powerful human beings. We have a lot of power contained within us, and we have a lot of the things that we do and say not only affect ourselves and our own growth, but they affect the growth of those around us, and they affect the planet. We affect our planet just by our thoughts. That's how powerful we are. And the sooner that we learn how powerful we are, I think the more we're going to want to watch what we do and say and think, so that we can make a better experience for ourselves and the people around us and help the planet as a whole as well.
Well, I think that's where the comment came in, that intention is important for doing something. So wake up spiritually and use your power.
Yes, it's all about waking up. You're so right. And that's what the guide group wants us to do. Wake up, be aware of what's happening in your life, and then take the action that you need to take to learn this lesson, cross this particular thing off of your spiritual to-do list, and then move on to the next thing. That way, you learn the lesson earlier, less drama, less pain, and you move on and take care of your other things and cross those off of your to-do list, get those all done and out of the way, and then have some fun.
Right. What do your guides say about karma and the progress of the human race? Because I recall they said the planet must shift.
Yes. I think that the planet is already in the shift. You know, there's a lot of things going on. You know, we see a lot of little natural disasters, and those are part of a shift. And we see a lot of people who are kind of checking out. I noticed that I hear people talking about cancer more than I've heard people talk about cancer in a decade or two. You know, there are people that are kind of checking out earlier. Maybe they don't want to be here for the, you know, for what's about to happen. But I do believe, and my friend Terry Marinaro brought this to my attention, she's very adamant about the fact that we're probably midpoint right now in the shift. And, you know, if you think back to 20 years ago and the kinds of books that were written and the channelings that were coming through, it seemed like the shift was going to be this terrible, horrible thing. And there wasn't really going to be anything left of the planet, and who would really want to survive it anyway, you know, if it was the way that it was going to be, the way that it was forecast. But because of human beings and because of the way that we've been working very hard to bring the light to the planet and to work on things and to lead by example and to not preach and to not be judgmental, just really leading by example is so important, we've managed to make the shift not quite as bad as it was going to be. I know that everyone right now is thinking about 2012. There's a movie out now, 2012, about the horrible catastrophes. You know, I don't know exactly what's going to happen in 2012. I don't believe that any of that is going to happen. I don't believe that the shift is going to be as bad as was predicted 20 years ago. And I think if you look at what's being channeled now, it seems like it's going to be a much kinder, gentler shift. And again, that is all because of the power of the beings who are on this planet right now.
I must say I agree entirely with your conclusions there. And I certainly believe that in, or by the end of 2012, there will be an ascension period. And I don't see it really ending in any great catastrophe. I mean, there may be events that will happen between now and then, which might be severe and cause a loss of life. Now, I'd like to move on to your chapter covering reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess people don't realize they are in a cycle of karma. But you're claiming, and I think it's quite correct, that the windows of opportunity will get them out of that cycle. Now,
yes.
How do they reach that point when they no longer need to reincarnate?
Well, we don't actually have to reincarnate at all. We can learn the lessons that we want to learn for our growth on the other side of the veil. There, just like the Earth is a great big blue classroom, there are classrooms on the other side as well. The reason that, from my understanding, the reason that we like to come here and do our classwork here is because we can accelerate our growth that way. See, when you're on the other side of the veil, we're wide awake, and we know 1 + 1 = 2. We understand what's going on. When we come over here, we're on the other side of the veil. We're kind of in a fog. We really don't know. And one of the challenges is, how fast can we wake up to who we really are, and how fast can we wake up to the things that we need to do and accomplish? Those things are difficult to do. So when can we stop reincarnation? Well, we can stop that any time that we want to, and we can learn our lessons on the other side. But we can accelerate our growth by being here, because it's a much more of a challenge to learn our lessons here than it is on the other side.
Yes. So when we have completed a series of lives and we agree with our guides and whoever that we've reached the point where the lessons have been learnt,
mm-hmm.
Then that will draw a line under the need to reincarnate. Now, what I found interesting in the chapter on reincarnation is you're talking about Atlantis, which I totally believe in, but your guide said that the U.S. is Atlantis reborn.
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. They're saying that in this book, Windows of Opportunities, and also they've been dictating more information about that in the book that I'm writing right now, Raising Your Vibrations for the New Age. And they are absolutely sure of what they're saying. And that involves a bunch of group karma. This is the first time, according to the guide groups, that such a large number of souls have come back together for a group karma experience. And, you know, the rise and fall of Atlantis, that's been discussed to death. But the United States of America is Atlantis reborn. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people talking about that now. It's not that new a subject, but the destruction that this karmic group caused in Atlantis and the damage that it did not only to that continent but also to the entire planet was so great that those responsible agreed that they would reincarnate together and try to get it right this time. And I think it's very interesting, too, the way that the guides talk about Gore and Bush and their relationship to the Atlanteans, that they were on opposite sides of the power struggle in Atlantis as they are on opposite sides of the power struggle here and now. And I don't know what Bush would think if he knew that he was a reincarnated Atlantean, but I think it's very interesting to think about.
Yes. Well, I've read many spiritual messages saying that there are indeed thousands and thousands of people that have reincarnated at this time that were in Atlantis. And, of course, as far as one can gather, the Atlantean period was tremendously long. I mean, there were different phases of it, but, of course, it was the collapse of Atlantis that is the most important part. And as you mentioned, we have a lesson to learn from that destruction. Now, what I was very pleased to read, because I have a lot of faith in Obama, is that they did mention that he will bring the people together.
Yes, yes, they said that. They said that he would be elected president, and they were right about that, thank goodness. And they said that he will usher in a time of reparation and peace. I think that one of the things that the reincarnated Atlanteans and really that the United States has to learn is that you can't be a bully. The United States is not the be-all, end-all of this planet. And it's time that we all come together, all the people of the world, come together globally, and we start acting like a planet. What one of us does affects the other as far as countries are concerned. And I feel like Obama is going to be somebody who's going to take us in that direction. I think that he's going to get rid of the bullying ways that George Bush had and bring in peace and understanding and really a global understanding of what we need to do to move forward as a planet, not individual countries. We need to move forward as a planet.
Yes. I think some of the things he said already clearly indicate that he thinks upon those lines, but I believe that at the moment he's obviously got a lot of people around him that aren't on the same wavelength, and I think for the time being he can't do too much, although I'm sure he wishes to really get cracking. So
he's got a lot of challenges. No doubt he has challenges, but my faith is in him.
Yes. There's a number of predictions going around at the moment that suggest perhaps if they come to be, there might be a breakthrough there. Now, I'd like to move on to your chapter about relationships. And I gather you wouldn't mind telling us, as an example, about the roles of the villains, about your friend Jim.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us a bit about that?
Yes. Okay. This is one of the reasons why I didn't want to write this book, because the guy group just loves to take my most embarrassing moments and throw them out there for the world to see. But you know what? If it helps just one person, that's okay. You know, the deal with Jim, that's where I really came into my own power, and I learned to stop giving away my power, and I learned to take control of my life. And this guy Jim, when we first got together, he pursued me like I was a movie star. He was just the most wonderful guy that you could ever meet in your life, and everything was wonderful. Until we got engaged. And at that point in time, it was like going to sleep with one person and waking up with another, if you know what I mean. Things totally changed. And he was all about control. And it got to the point where I couldn't even buy a dish towel without getting his prior approval, if you can imagine such a thing. He criticized my makeup. He criticized my hair. He even told me one day as we were walking into a restaurant, I will never forget this, he told me that I had the wrong ankles. Have you ever heard of such a thing? How can you have the wrong ankles, you know? And didn't you see them before we got engaged? But, you know, to know you didn't like them that much, it was crazy. Yeah. And these things went on and on and on until one day he pushed me against a wall, and he did something to me that had never happened to me before in my life. He spit in my face. And when he did that, the business part of me was thinking, and this is so stupid, I know, but I was thinking, what is the protocol for this? What do you do when somebody spits in your face? I had never been in such a position before in my life, somebody actually pushing me and doing something like that. And I pushed him away, and I ran to the phone, and I dialed 911, and the police came, and he moved out, and that was great. And that was a great day for me, but not because that relationship ended, but because I learned a very big lesson that day. And that was about not giving away my power, how to hold on to my power and how to keep control of my life. But the guide group, you know, that wasn't enough for the guide group. They wanted me to continue on a little bit. They wanted me to take a look back at my own personal life script, because Jim was really the culmination of a life script for me. And when I looked back, I could see that really my first husband, other major relationships in my life, they were all a little bit on the control freak side. But they started out very gentle and then got worse and worse. And if I had kind of woken up or knew about windows of opportunity at that point in time in life scripts, I could have taken care of that lesson early on with a lot less pain and drama. I did not have to be knocked up against a wall and have somebody spit in my face to learn that lesson. And I'm going to tell your listeners something else, because this is very, very important. that little voice inside you, I'm going to tell you that my guide group, my little voice, they all told me not to go with Jim, not to start that relationship. They all told me to stay with my other husband and that I would be able to learn my lessons that way, but I did not listen to them. I did not listen to them. And on I went and end up having to go through this whole big dramatic thing. Now, I will tell you this too. When it was all over, this guy, I call him the spitter now, the spitter got a job at my company. Not just at my company, but in my boss's office. Clearly, whatever was between us was still not finished. And he kept on asking me, oh, come and have a cup of coffee with me, have a cup of coffee with me. And I was just totally resisting it. I didn't even want to see this guy. It was like, knowing about relationship villains, knowing about windows of opportunity, that's one thing. But having to see somebody like this day after day, very, very difficult to do. Finally, I broke down and I said, okay, fine, let's go have that cup of coffee. And he did something that took me completely by surprise. He apologized to me. He apologized. He told me that he learned so much from the relationship and he wanted forgiveness, and I forgave him. And then miraculously, he left the company and I've never had to see him again. And that's because our time together was just over. And the guides say that when it comes to relationship villains, this guy was definitely one of mine and one of the best friends that I have on the other side of the veil, who agreed to play a very, very nasty, villainous role for me so that I would wake the heck up and take back my power. But when it comes to relationship villains, the way that it goes is this. Once you kind of, it's like facing up to a bully, and bullies are all relationship villains. Every bully is a relationship villain. You face up to them, and your time together is either over, you don't have to see that person again, or the relationship goes to a much more palatable level, and you don't have those same kinds of nasty things going on. But the important thing there is you've got to face up to it. So that's my Jim story, my spitter story, and I learned a lot from that story. And when we get back on the other side, I plan to nominate him for a Spiritual Academy Award for the role that he played.
Yes, that's a very interesting story, and I thank you for sharing it with us. But just thinking of this question of your holding on to your power, not giving it away, what would you visualize would have happened had you stood up to that person? I mean, what would have been the outcome? Would you have actually, say, left them earlier in your life? I mean, how do you see that?
Well, I think here's what I was doing. In every relationship that I had, when I did the little mini life review that my guide group asked me to do for this book, and I looked back and I could see that in every major relationship that I had, Yes, people did try to control me. And, you know, in silly ways earlier on, like you couldn't buy name brand bread, I had to buy generic bread. That was a control type thing. Had I stood up to that then, I would not have had to go through the other struggles that I had to go through. But I didn't recognize it for what it was. And in each relationship that I had, I let these things go on and on and on until I had enough. And then I just walked, you know, I blew up, the relationship was over, and what I learned was I never communicated. I didn't sit down with someone to say, why isn't this working, or this is how I'm feeling about this. I just let them do their thing until I had enough of it, and then I walked. And you know what that means? Absolutely, positively, no growth for me whatsoever. And here's the very ironic thing about this, Mike. I have a degree in communications.
Right. Say no more. Right. So are you really saying that what everybody needs in a relationship, whether it's husband, wife, or just friends, is it's a matter of give and take?
It is a give and take, and you have to stand up for yourself. You know, you have to take care of yourself, and if someone is impeding on your free will, and that's a way to know if something is right or wrong, if someone's stepping on your free will, then something's wrong. and you need to step up and you need to say something about it. And that sounds so easy for me to say to you right now during this interview, but that is one of the hardest lessons that I have ever learned in my life. And I'm in my 50s now. That is how hard a lesson that was.
Right,
and now I feel sorry for my present husband because I don't take anything. As soon as something is going a little bit off, we're sitting down at the table and we're having a conversation. Sometimes I feel very sorry for him, you know. And but one of the great things that happened, though, by my learning that lesson with Jim was this. I was then open for a much better relationship, and I got it fairly quickly. And I'm not saying that my current marriage is all strawberries and cream. It's not. I mean, we argue, but that's what's new for me. I argue things out. We talk about stuff instead of just letting it sit there until it blows up. So I'm very happy about that. But in a way, I do feel a little bit badly for my husband because, you know, now he's got to sit down at that table and talk things out all the time.
Right. Sounds good to me. Now, questions occur to me here. Do you think that the villain sometimes is reflecting back to the person they're with, part of what may have been their personality, say, earlier in their life or even in a previous life? Do you think that's why you're experiencing that particular facet?
No, I really don't. I'm not, you know, I have to think about that, but right off the cuff, I would say no. I think that when we're planning our life, the first thing we do is decide what karmic debts we want to get rid of and what experiences we want to have for growth. And once we decide what it is that we want to do and what we want to learn, at that point we have to figure out how are we going to do it. And that's when we create and plan those windows of opportunity. And as we plan those windows of opportunity, we need the players. You know, was it Shakespeare, I think, who said all the world is a stage and all the people on it are players? I know I'm not saying that exactly right, but I think that that's very much what the planet Earth is like. And once we decide on those windows of opportunity, well, we need the people to help us accomplish these things. And that's where those relationship villains come in. I think that they decide on their role, or we help them decide on that role based on what it is that we want to learn in this particular incarnation. I think the villains are tailored to the windows of opportunity. But, you know, you bring up a very important point, and I'm going to give that a lot of thought and see what comes up. I'm going to check with the guides on that also.
Right, interesting. Now, I had to smile at one of the humorous parts in your book. I mean, there may be many, but one I particularly like was when you mentioned that I believe you suffered a bit of cart rage when you went shopping. So I hope you've got over that now.
Yes, another one of my more embarrassing times here. But, you know, relationship villains and windows of opportunity, they turn up all over the place. You never know where they're going to be. And I noticed after a couple of months, every time that I was going into the grocery store, I thought, why are the people in here so rude? Why are they so mean? And I'm looking around thinking, I'm a nice person. I just don't understand why people are so rude to me. And it was to the point where people were banging into my cart, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought, what's going on here? And I even changed grocery stores thinking, you know, maybe it was just the location and people would be nicer down the street. But the same kind of thing was happening to me. And I was out to lunch with a friend of mine, and I was telling her about it. And then we decided to do something a little bit different. We examined my behavior, because if these things kept on happening, then there's got to be a reason, because, like, as you said earlier, when you continue to draw stuff to you, there's got to be a reason. You've got to wake up and figure out what that is. And what I realized was that every time that I ran into the grocery store, I was thinking about what am I going to make for dinner, the next thing that I have to do, what happened at work. I was never looking people in the eye. I was always looking down, always in a hurry. I certainly wasn't being nice or pleasant to anybody, and that kind of thing was kind of coming right back to me. And when somebody would knock into me by accident, I would have what can only be described as cart rage. I would flip out. I would just totally flip out. And so I thought to myself, well, at that point in time, I was reading all the Doreen Virtue books, you know, all the angel books, and those are such great books, her books. And I thought, well, I'm going to treat everybody in the grocery store as if they're an angel here on earth. And so that's what I started to do. I started smiling at everybody and looking everybody in the eye and just being really nice, letting people jump ahead of me in line. And lo and behold, what do you think happened? They were nice in the grocery store. The grocery store became a whole different experience. So we absolutely can co-create our environment. There is no doubt about that. And, you know, what I learned there, I learned patience, and I learned to treat people the way that I want to be treated myself. Those were the two big things that I got out of my grocery store escapades, and I do not have cart rage anymore.
That's great to hear. Now, I want to jump the chapter on evolution, except to say that you do concur with people that believe that in 2012 there will be a shift to the fifth dimension, which will take many incarnate souls with it, although you mentioned that some will remain to continue their work. What I'd like to do is go on to the next chapter, learning and growth, because mm-hmm. we haven't got too much time left. It's going so quickly.
It's going so fast.
Where do murder and suicide come into one's learning cycle?
Okay. Well, from what I understand from the guide group, murder is not a planned experience at all. We do not sit at the planning table where one of us plans to be a murderer and the other one plans to be murdered. It doesn't really happen that way. From what I understand, it's kind of like a short circuit, like an aberration in the brain. And it often starts when a soul finds itself in a situation or a series of situations that are just too much for it to handle. And from what the guide group says, these short circuits generally happen early in life. Like when a soul is ill-treated as a child, the shock that the soul experiences, it's kind of like a fuse that burns out in the brain. And sometimes one incident will cause the short circuit, and sometimes it takes several incidents to do it. And in the book, the guide group talks about two different kinds of murder. Murder as a crime of passion, which is one thing, and then murder as part of a string of murders, like a serial killer kind of thing.
Yes.
So those are the things that the guides talk about in the book.
What about suicide?
Suicide, okay. That is kind of the same thing. Well, suicide, according to the guides, it's an indicator. There's two reasons for suicide. It can be an indicator that an entity has taken on too much, or that changes have occurred that the soul is unable or unprepared to deal with. The pressure kind of becomes so great that they just become soul sick and really long for home. And, you know, I mean, I think all of us know what soul sickness is, and I think all of us long for home at one point or another. But for those of us who commit suicide, the longing for home, you know, it might not be something that they're aware of consciously, but they just want to end their pain, and they don't know what else to do. And that's one reason for it. And the other reason for it, according to the guide group, is that an entity wants to punish other people. And they think that attempting, highlight bold, underline, attempting suicide will make their point, because those who want to punish others with a suicide attempt, they very rarely intend to go all the way with it. Their intent is really to scare people into changing their behavior or to make them feel badly, and then it goes too far and they find themselves back home. But whatever the reason, you know, suicide and murder, it disrupts things. It disrupts things not only for that soul, but for all of the people around them, because when we sit and we plan our lives and we create these windows of opportunity, I mean, these are elaborate plans that we put into effect, not only for ourselves. I mean, we may have relationship villains and friends and family that are going to help us learn lessons, but we also play a role in other people's lives as well. So when we end our life early, or if we're murdered, or if we commit murder, all of those windows of opportunities, they have to be reworked. When it comes to murder, a murderer goes to prison. Well, that doesn't mean that he has to stop his growth. His advisors, his group on the other side, his higher self, they get together and they work out new windows of opportunity that he can carry out in his new environment. And the same for the person who was murdered, or committed suicide. They're not there to play their roles. Things have to change. So it's almost like a 911 emergency on the other side of the veil, where our advisors, guides, friends put together new windows of opportunity so that we can go on with our learning. You know, to come here and go through the birth process and go through the growing up process and to have it cut short, that's a very sad thing, because we just have so much that we want to do and we want to learn and we want to get it done. And then that happens, we have to find other ways to do it, and that's when we have to rely on our higher selves and the folks on the other side of the veil.
Yes, I have to think that when these people go over to the other side, if what has happened is due to some mental illness, then there is a more compassionate view taken, because you could say they're not normal. Now, we've got little time left, but I'd just like you to tell us in about 1 minute flat, what sort of message comes out from your guides about ETs?
Ah, okay. No one has ever asked me that question before. That was the scariest part of what I put in the book. The message that comes out about ETs is this. They've been here. The government knows that they're here. The government is keeping it from us, but that is all going to backfire in the government's face very, very soon. I don't remember exactly what's in Windows of Opportunity about this, but I know what I'm getting right now for the second book, and that is that very, very shortly, things are going to happen where the entire planet is going to become aware of ETs, and that's going to be a good thing.
Brilliant. Yes, well, that indeed fits in with the prediction that before the end of the year, or in the space of about 2 months, Obama will at least announce their presence, which will allow then more progress to be made with the ETs. Now,
yes.
Tell people how they can get hold of your book, and perhaps you'd like to give your website address anyway.
Oh, thank you. Yes, www.sherry, S-H-E-R-R-I, Cortland, C-O-R-T-L-A-N-D.com. You can log on there. And if you'd like to get my monthly newsletter, just send me an email through that website. You can also go to Amazon.com or OzarkMountain.com for the book.
Right. How often does your newsletter come out?
Once a month.
And that's free, is it?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I guess it would be. just like to make sure there.
Absolutely free. The book will cost you, but the newsletter is free.
That's great. Okay. I mean, does the newsletter cover some of the latest information you're getting from your group guides? Is that what it's about?
Well, right now I'm talking a lot about relationship villains and windows of opportunity and karma. And then as we go along, yes, there will be a lot more. There'll be a lot more on what we can do to raise our vibrations to help ourselves and to help the planet.
That's fine. Thank you very much, Sherry, for coming on to my program. It's been terrifically interesting talking to you. I hope your book sales continue to rise. I shall announce next week's guest now, who is Jack Ellis, who's was on my program earlier this year. He's an author and spiritual teacher who wrote a novel based on his spiritual understanding called A Tale of 2012. He said he's got a lot more to tell us, and he's coming back next Friday. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.